because, you know. But devotees like Gopi Puranadana and all the artists, we're all concentrated in that New York temple. So this particular song was sung by him, and it's not too long, but since normally we chant Jai Radha anyway, we want to listen to the song, and everyone can just appreciate that the mood of Srila Prabhupada through the song, the feeling, this, the intense emotion on his arrival, and then being taking a short walk into Boston City until he returned back to the ship, and that inspiration resulting in this famous poem.
Thank you.
Koti Vaishna Brindaki, Nama Chapta Shila Hridasta Kurki, Prem Sekaho Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhunidhan on the Shri Advaita Gadadha Shivasati Gopakta Brindaki, Shri Shri Radha Krishna Gopinath Shamakunda Radha Kunda Giri Govardhan Ki, Shri Vrindavan Dham Ki, Shri Mayapur Navadvip Dham Ki, Ganga Maya Ki, Jamuna Maya Ki, Bhakti Devi Ki, Shri Mati Tulsi Maharani Ki, Samaveda Bhakta Brindaki, Gaur Premanandi. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru, Sri Gauranga, and Srila Prabhupada. Prabhupada once said that one of the symptoms of a self-realized soul is that he writes profusely, not just bits and pieces. Because, as we've seen, just like sometimes we're struggling to get a connection on the internet, frustration is there, we can't connect. But the pure devotee has no such difficulty. He's directly connected to Krishna. So he has access to this unlimited reservoir of all aspects, all knowledge, all rasas, everything is there. So sometimes I think, how will we ever come close to this? And I remember my futile attempts to write something, anything. You know, but because there's, without realization, it is not possible. One time, when Prabhupada first left the New York temple to go to the West Coast, so the first time leaving this fledgling flock of devotees, so Satsuma Maharaj was relating this time. It was just, you know, 1 year after the incorporation of the temple. So 1967, so we know the chronology. So Prabhupada told Satsuru, Brahmananda, Kirtananda, they asked, well, Prabhupada, what should we do? You know, how does the program go on without you? I mean, they had no clue. So Prabhupada said, no, everything is there. You just, you know, take care of the deities, everything, you make the offerings, you give class. And Prabhupada said, but who, they said, who should give class, Prabhupada? Because only Prabhupada gave class. Who should give class? Prabhupada said, no, you give class. And they said, Prabhupada, what should we speak on? Prabhupada said, speak according to your realization. And then Satsuru Maharaj told me, so that whole time, they were the very shortest classes. They would last 5 or 10 minutes. Because no one would speak on anything except their realization. And realization was very limited. But that's how careful they were, to speak only according to their realization. So he was, of course, we know that Satsuru Maharaj was a prolific writer, and so many of our devotees who have taken up this effort of spreading Krishna consciousness. We have a huge compendium of literature expanded from Srila Prabhupada's realization. So he has given us the seed, just like the planting the seed. So we have to rise to that. But when I see writing like this just flow freely, you know, in the short time between his departure from Boston, from the time he returns to the ship till his arrival in New York, this is nothing short of amazing. You know, and in the future, you know, maybe we're a little too close to the historical context, you know, but how we view the writings and the bhajans of the great acharyas, Narottam Das Thakur, and all these others. In the future, they'll see Srila Prabhupada's works in the same way. That this contribution was nothing short of that. This amazing personality. But for now, we're content to be able to just have this, you know, for our understanding. And there's one particular verse. And of course, everyone knows this verse. Oh Lord, I am just like a puppet in your hands. So if you brought me here to dance, then make me dance. Oh Lord, make me dance as you like. So this absolute surrender, this gesture, when we all, I mean, Prabhupada was, who is more surrendered to Srila Prabhupada? To leave everything behind, to get on a ship and travel across the world, with no idea of what the future would hold. I mean, from our perspective. He was fully dependent on Krishna. So Krishna knew, and through that vision on the boat, Prabhupada had some idea that Krishna is in charge. He's rowing the boat. So I'm safe. But still, he writes this for our benefit, so that we can understand how we should appreciate, how we should think. Not that this is just some mechanical managerial expertise that somehow manifested these thousands of temples and these tens of thousands of devotees. Although some try to view it in such a way. But it is nothing material. And he's saying like that. And we have to understand. And we should be very cautious not to try to analyze it in, or how can you say, compartmentalize it as some material phenomena. Because that will obviously lead to some false analysis. You know, but we should appreciate the purity by how it was established and how it will go on. And this is the This is the challenge. How to remain secure in that realization that without purity, this movement is doomed. And this is an individual effort. It is not a collective imposition. It is not that because the GBC says, no, you must be pure, that therefore some magic pixie dust is sprinkled and all of a sudden everyone is. No, we are our brothers and sisters' keeper. This is clear that satsanga is, and asatsanga, these two things, so careful we have to be, so cautious in our association. Even a little carelessness. Sometimes devotional service is compared to a razor's edge. Everyone has heard that analogy. Just a small slip and there's blood. Everyone has experience. But somehow or other, we take, you know, even Prabhupada used to comment, our devotees, they don't eat outside in restaurants and this and that. Why? Why does he say that? Because that's also association. You're taking the association of those who prepared those foodstuffs. Very intimate association. How intimate? You're eating this association. How much more intimate does it get? So you're putting into your body whatever rajas, tamas, no sattva is there. So we have to be clearly conscious, not just, you know, some institutional consciousness, individual care and consideration in everything we do, whatever it is. And Prabhupada is taking us in all these various slokas, and we can go through them one by one, but everybody has read them. But just to appreciate that, in the we're reading now sixth canto. Of course, we're pausing for this special occasion. But in one purport, after the death of his son, King Chitraketu was again visited by Angira Muni, but this time accompanied by Narad Muni. And in the purport, Prabhupada describes this parallel path. Vairagya Vidya Nija Bhakti Yoga. That these cannot be separated. Just like you cannot take the tracks of the train, you cannot remove one, the train cannot continue. You've effectively derailed it at that point. Whichever point you've removed that track, at that point the train stops. So if somehow or other in our Krishna consciousness, we've come to that point where now we're again comfortable, complacent. I'm trying to fulfill my material needs. I think I'm in a good position. I'm just right. But what does that mean? Is there those two parallel tracks? Is the vairagya and the vidya? Are they there? Because if they're not, then you're in an illusion. You're sitting in the train station and you're not moving, but you don't know. Because the train station also has so many amenities. It has the dirty bathroom, it has the dirty, you know, chai, masala, mongpali. It has everything you can get for sense gratification. But you're not going to leave that station. You know, you're going to die there. Train has stopped. So one has to make that effort to cultivate vairagya. Because without vairagya, there's no vidya. There's no bhakti yoga. These things, why does Prabhupada tell us? Austerity is the wealth of the brahmanas. What does that mean? Who's performing austerity? We're not in the Himalayas. We're not doing that sitting in the hot sun or in the hot water or surrounded by fire. Nobody's doing that. So our sacrifice, our austerity is the instruction to the spiritual master. What are they? Rise early, attend Mangal Arati, chant 16 rounds, hear Srimad Bhagavatam, serve the deity, serve the Vaishnavas, not serve my senses. And here we have Prabhupada coming, and he's praying in such a heartfelt way. You can't read this and not be moved emotionally. Because this is the person that came and saved us. Without this effort, and so we have this obligation to completely internalize his mood of sacrifice and to give it to others. That is the only reason for these temples. It's not to impress anybody, it's not to get some temporary position, some salary. It is only there to facilitate the figure is astounding. We're talking 12 million people in a year will come and visit this temple. 12 million people. Every one of them should see all the devotees following what Prabhupada had given us. He said, when our devotees pay obeisances, they see us and they imitate, and therefore they make advancement. So we are simply following his example, and they will follow our example. So if our example is simple living and high thinking, then they will follow. If our example is sinful living and high buildings, then they will also follow. So that is our choice. How do we want to be seen? Prabhupada told Rupa Nuga, he said, our devotees should be seen as in everything honest. In everything honest. Not that when they see devotees they think, as happened previously, that, oh, this person will try to take my money, in some tricky way, in the airports or here and there. Prabhupada didn't approve. He didn't like it. He was not of that mentality that the end justifies the means. He said the devotee should be known as honest. So we have that obligation to carry these instructions in every aspect of our activities. But we are the individual gatekeepers, and we are also the collective gatekeepers, that such infiltration should not come into my heart and should not come into my God brothers and God sisters' hearts, not come into the campus, not come into the society. And otherwise, what do we do? What is our? It is just like dirt. If you see dirt on the street and you ignore it, then you are of the same. Prabhupada said, we tell this story all the time because it's very, how can you say, graphic and illustrative. That when Prabhupada passed the dirty bathroom, he was disgusted. Why? Because no one besides him took any action. And therefore he concluded that everyone is in the mode of ignorance. And he said, if I ignored it, then I'm also in the mode of ignorance. So we cannot ignore these things, because that subtle contamination, that infection, dulls you to the reality of the mode of goodness. That it's a mode of ignorance, but it's not my job. Not my job. So how many times have we heard that? It's not my job, not my service. No, our service is to not be in the mode of ignorance. So whatever that requires, if it means bending down and picking up a piece of paper and taking it to the trash can, that's my individual effort. If it means pointing out something to the relevant manager, that's my collective contribution. I'm seeing something, it should not stand. I have a duty. Even the karmis say that. See something, say something. They're trying to elevate everyone to this consciousness of not being ignorant. But we have a greater impetus that this is for our spiritual elevation. Even such a small act like that. Why? Because it is based on the instruction of the spiritual master. It is not just some mundane consideration not to see litter. No, it's litter is, we're not so many people, there's so much litter everywhere. We're not going to pick up every single thing. But on our campus, in our temple, we have to try. You know, what we didn't have when we joined the temple, we cleaned the temple. One devotee, old devotee, Gorhari, when he first met Srila Prabhupada, there was a commune called Morningstar. Vishnujan Maharaj and Tamal Krishna Maharaj and many other devotees, including Gorhari, were members of these communes. This particular commune was very famous. And everybody did their own thing. There was those who lived like this style and those who lived like this style. Vishnujan Maharaj used to live in a teepee. And Tamal Krishna Maharaj used to live in a treehouse. And Tamal Krishna Maharaj would wake up in the morning, he would urinate into Vishnujan Maharaj's teepee. They weren't devotees. But they weren't exactly friends. And Gorhari was, fancied himself a gardener. He was in the garden. And Prabhupada went to this commune. Prabhupada's mercy. He went to collect us in any condition, from the Bowery to the communes. And when, and Gorhari told me the story, and he was, you know, suitably embarrassed. He said, Prabhupada came, I was stark naked, and I was hoeing potatoes in the garden. And Prabhupada asked him what he was doing, and Gorhari said, I'm hoeing potatoes. And Prabhupada said, and you know, who are you? And he said, my name, you know, he was Herb Bresic. And they exchanged these things, and Prabhupada shook his hand. Gorhari said, nice to meet you, Mr. Swami. Prabhupada, everybody called Prabhupada Swami. Nice to meet you, Mr. Swami. Just in his birthday suit. Imagine meeting your spiritual master the first time. Nothing to hide. All these old devotees had many leelas together. Gorhari, Vishnujan, Tamal Krishna. But they're all transcendental. All these pastimes will be related in different ways in different places. But they're all nectar. But without Srila Prabhupada, none of this would have been possible. So on this particular day, we especially take note, Paschacha Deshatarani, that he came to the Western world to deliver us. You know, on September 17th, we don't change the date. We don't adjust it for the moon or the sun or this. It remains September 17th. And it's celebrated all over the world. You know, it's an interesting that how we don't really know how it will be viewed in the future. But in America, they also celebrate September 17th as something else. That is the day that the Constitution of the United States was ratified. And that document guides them in many ways. And so it's a something that is never changed. So hopefully we'll understand how this date, how this particular document also should never change and should be revered in such a special way. Because it was not just composed, you know, in some spur of the moment. It might have been, but it was the flow of realization that culminated in his arrival to fulfill the order of his spiritual master, the order of the previous acharyas, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It has so much importance in this way. Practically more important than any other so-called poem. Even coming from the acharyas, they're very deep in so many realizations. And they're taking us into these esoteric levels. But we see all of those things demonstrated in this one poem. All of these rasas, all of these realizations, you know, embodied in one humble soul that came to the United States. So if there's any they want us to end at 8:45. There's any questions or comments? I mean, we can read more of these verses if we want, but they're so, each one would then lead into so much discussion, and that we don't have time for. Has anyone ever visited Commonwealth Pier in Boston?
Yeah.
Holy Tirtha. How about Pier number 5 on the Brooklyn waterfront? Anyone visited there? Pier number 5, the boat went after the Jaladutta left, it came to New York. So that Prabhupada came to visit that. So you visited both Tirthas. Congratulations. You have completed. The Mohammedans, they have their 5 requirements that they have to go to Mecca and Medina, you know, they have to all perform all these things. So for us, we have to also visit certain places. Tompkins Square Park, Commonwealth Pier, Pier number 5. There are others. Prabhupada's first office, his first residence, 72nd Street and Broadway. The Second Avenue Temple, his apartment behind Matchless Gifts. These places are very special. They give us some intimate look at how such a great soul conducted his affairs. I was telling, before Prabhupada had any other followers, before Second Avenue, before the Bowery, I was temple commander in what we called 55th Street Temple. That was the 4th temple in New York. Set 2 temples on 2nd Avenue, 26 and 61. Then 439 Henry Street in Brooklyn. And then in Manhattan, 349 West 55th Street. So they had... New Manhattan is a very special place. Prabhupada, of course, preached there all over, and he walked everywhere and took buses everywhere. Just in his solitary, he had no one. He walked alone. And, you know, we hear those stories about speaking to the bus driver, about people that there are so many temples, we're only separated by time. Everyone has heard these bits and pieces. One such person who revealed quite a bit of information, nobody knew. You know, after the Sunday feast one night, so that means we were up late cleaning. So people would come to the door, because everyone knows if you're hungry, right, you go to the Hare Krishna temple. And so many bums would come to the temple. And they would knock on the door, and we didn't let them in, but we had a place they could enter, a foyer area out of the cold. This was the winter. New York winters are very brutal. You see Prabhupada bundled up in the overcoat and that black cap he wore and his scarf. And amazing cold. He never experienced cold like this, Srila Prabhupada. So this bum, you could tell New York bums, they wear multiple layers of clothing. So they look much larger than they actually are, because they don't eat much, but they have this appearance because of the 5 or 6 garments that they're wearing. And so this person, all you see is this bundle of cloth, looks almost like a caricature, like the Michelin Man or something, or a snowman. So I went to the door, I unlocked the door, and we're always ready because you never know. It's New York, so many crazy people. But our duty, a guest comes, we should understand what is the... So much dirt, you could not tell if this person was what ethnic consideration, black, white, it was not possible. Just this dirty visage, maybe some sadhu, like a Shivite covered with ashes. But he came in, and the first thing that surprised me was he said, Hare Krishna. So I said, oh, Hare Krishna. Okay, the bums usually don't. Usually they say food. We want food. But he said, Hare Krishna. I said, Hare Krishna. I said, the temple's closed. I says, but if you like a plate, please wait here. I says, yeah, I want to play. I want prasadam. But then, before I could turn around and get prasadam, he said, is Prabhupada here? And I said, what? And actually, he didn't just say Prabhupada. He said, is Swamiji here? And nobody addressed Prabhupada as Swamiji. This is just after Prabhupada left, 1978 or 79. And I thought to myself, this is a little strange. So I said, Prabhupada left the planet last year, 1977. And his whole demeanor completely changed. He just became so somber, so just like frozen in time. Like I told him that the world was going to end. And then I said, did you know Srila Prabhupada? And I said, yes. So I said, okay. Then I said, okay, wait. I opened the second door. I shut the door behind him. I said, come inside. I thought, this is a different type of bum. So I sat him down. I said, just wait, I'll get you prasadam. So I got him prasadam. I said, how do you know Srila Prabhupada? He said, I met Srila Prabhupada at Dr. Mishra's. So this is before any other devotees had met Prabhupada, because that was where Prabhupada went first after Butler. He had met some, you know, he had tried to find Dr. Mishra, but actually Dr. Mishra was supposed to meet him, send his man, but it didn't happen. It didn't. But somehow or other, they eventually made connection. And so Prabhupada would, you know, go there, stay there for some time, speak there. But then Prabhupada wanted to separate. And that's when he got this office. And you're not supposed to live there. You can imagine, Prabhupada was actually living there and then taking shower at Dr. Mishra. This is where his typewriter was stolen. Tape recorder. Somebody snuck through the transom, which is a window on top of a door. He wasn't careful, so that set him back. But it was at this time he met this person, and his name is Robert. And Prabhupada used to call him Mr. Robert. And so if you have read Satsuma Maharaj's books, then you'll... So what had happened is when he told me this, then I immediately contacted Satsuma Maharaj. I says, Maharaj, you need to talk to this person. Just came to the temple. He has information that I've never heard before. He was telling me all these things. He used to accompany Srila Prabhupada everywhere. Go grocery shopping for him, get things for him, brought Prabhupada a mattress. I mean, very simple things, but... And this person was a very simple person. In you know, the vernacular of the time, he would be considered someone who is slow. He was not fully matured intellectually. So he had that simple. Because of this, he was on some welfare system for people in that condition. But he was able to live independently. But he was just like a child in a man's body. So anyways, Satsuma Maharaj made contact, and for quite some time they sat and discussed and recorded all this information. And it was quite some information. And then he continued to come to the temple, and many, many years later, he finally took initiation from Vipramukhya Prabhu at that time. And then just a couple of years ago, he passed away. So you never know. I mean, it's a strange thing. What happens if we never answered the door that night? We thought, this is just another bum. You know, there's so many bums, they all come to the door. But Prabhupada said that the only reason this temple is built is so that guests can come. It's not a place for us to live. It's not a personal shelter. It's a shelter for the whole world. And so these little... Krishna is giving so much instruction by these incidents. And it's not just for us. Like I said, Satchel Maharaj, he couldn't believe that this person was out there. And how did Krishna send him at that particular time? Just when they're beginning to write and collect this history. And he could have been dead. I mean, he's living in the most abominable conditions. Literally on the street. I guess, and And the thing is, when I opened the door, the first time the smell hit me, and I was thinking, I just shut the door. Because they have this abominable odor. Abominable. It's intolerable. You know, you just want to run. I thought, it's not my duty. I at least we'll get them prasadam and then they'll leave. But then he said those magic words, you know, Hare Krishna. You know, where's Swamiji? Where's Prabhupada? So, you know, just like a very, like a treasure in a filthy place. Anyway, we should never neglect guests. Very important. You know, as we see from this. Whatever we have to do. It's the same thing on Sankirtan. We can't pick and choose who gets Prabhupada's mercy, who gets the mercy of the... And that's why Sankirtan is so important, and everyone should be trained in this. And it's not just that we have on our fixed campus. This is an easy thing, a captive audience. You have to go into the masses and distribute there and be rejected 1,000 times to taste the nectar. Vairagya Vidya Nija Bhakti Yoga. No, then you get that taste. Then you get the realization. It doesn't come in any other way. It doesn't come artificially. You cannot cultivate this sitting in your place and reading. You have to go into the arena of sacrifice, the kirtan, the sankirtan jagya. So there, we can always go on, but are there any questions, comments? What to do, how to... Srila Prabhupada ki. Yeah.